Welcome to Heavy Networking, and today we're getting heavy with multi-cloud networking. Well, single-cloud networking too, but the point is cloud networking's a bit of a challenge, and our sponsor today is Aviatrix, and they are going to be sharing with us their platform to make your cloud networking life much easier. Greg Farrow is with me, and Greg, what stuck out to you during this conversation?
I think there's a couple of things. One of them is that a lot of people don't realize that the cloud is proprietary. Each one of the clouds is unique, and their forwarding planes don't look like any other forwarding plane, and the configuration engines of each of the clouds are proprietary. So if you are going to be in multiple clouds, and the research data shows that 90% of enterprises are already multi-cloud or will be multi-cloud, then how do you bring the networking together when you've actually got multi-vendor clouds? And that's what Aviatrix is solving.
Yeah, I was pretty taken with the whole idea of what they're doing for the things that you just said, and then also the visibility piece that they give you. So at the end of the day, what you end up with is not just an abstraction away of the proprietary nature of these different clouds and their features, but also a very clear look into exactly how traffic is making it between two endpoints that are in those clouds. There was more here than I thought, and neither of us even mentioned much about the security aspect, which is a fairly robust part of this conversation that we're about to have as well.
Yeah, security, compliance, visibility. It's deeper than you think.
It is indeed. So have a listen. Please enjoy this sponsored heavy networking discussion with Shahzad Ali and Hamad Alam, both principal cloud solutions architects at Aviatrix. Well, gentlemen from Aviatrix, welcome to the show. And I believe this is the first time Aviatrix has been on Packet Pusher. So we got to introduce you guys to the audience. So so give us the high level. Who are you guys? What do you do?
Thank you for having us. Aviatrix Systems is a company which provides multi-cloud networking and security platform for the enterprises. So essentially what we are trying to do is we abstract away the complexities of all the different public clouds. So you have the Azures and AWS and GCP and OCIs, right? And you have various constructs across all these different public clouds. And they are all similar, but different. And when you're building your network infrastructure and you're trying to implement security and operations across all these clouds, it's hard because all of them are different. How would you be able to do that in a consistent manner? You need something that understands all these clouds and provides advanced networking and security, and most importantly, operations. So you're basically able to consume all these great services by these hyperscaler providers, but still be able to have the control that enterprise wants.
So this really comes down to this idea that all of the public cloud providers have a different way of approaching network. And they all use different language, like Azure is a VNet, AWS is a VPC, Google calls it global routing, and you've got all these different things. And it's a bit like every one of them has a completely different CLI, although in this case, it's mostly APIs. And trying to configure the same things across all of the different public clouds is extraordinarily difficult, I think.
Absolutely, yes, that's a huge challenge. And also you have to think that who are the people who are doing it, right? It's not, you're not getting a new breed of people with brand new skill set. It's the same you and I, the network engineers and the operations people who are doing on-prem. And now we need to learn all these different constructs. And the learning path is not straightforward. So every cloud provider has 3 to 4 certifications that you need to go through. But if I'm an enterprise, I'm the VP or director, and I have a fleet of engineers that I need to enable, I need them to send them to like 15 courses. If I have 50 people, it's impractical, right?
And multi-cloud is kind of a given these days too. Like everybody talks about being all in on one cloud, but most research papers that I've seen say most enterprises will end up on multiple clouds. They'll be using a combination of Google, Azure, and AWS. It's not going to be, oh, we're just in one or the other. That you actually end up in multiples for whatever reason.
Absolutely. Yeah, because when you're building your enterprise infrastructure, so you as a network guy will never be able to tell the applications team where to go and consume, right? The application owners will find the right cloud that fits the bill for the service that they want. And they will come to you, the infrastructure guy, saying, I'm going there. And I need the network services there.
Yeah, that's the very common theme that you mentioned. But the challenges are almost the same, even if you are in one single cloud or if you are in the multiple clouds. And the way I see it, I mean, you have the day zero challenges, and then you have day two challenges. So if you look at these cloud providers, they are actually building, they are giving you these services, these constructs, and those are like the Lego pieces that they give you. And they have this mantra of, okay, take it and go build yourself, right? So there's no process around it. I have seen customers who actually started putting the workload in the public cloud. Their DevOps team, they said, you know, the on-prem data center is slow. You know, if I'm asking for a VLAN, it will take me, I don't know, weeks to get a simple VLAN. So I'm going to use the cloud. So they started building this thing in the cloud. They started natively peering those VPCs and VNets. They started using the security group in one place, something else in some other place.
Yeah.
So there was no process around it.
So I think this is a really important fact here, is that multi-cloud is a fact of life. And it's something that we've talked about on and off on the shows for quite some period of time. But what we haven't discussed is just how each of the clouds is effectively proprietary. You can't use the same principles or the same ideas to configure the network architectures between them. But as an operator, or the day two, as you talked about there, you said that what happens on day two when you've built it for the first time, how do you keep it sustained and consistent? And really, the only way I think most people need it is they're going to need some sort of tooling. And this is where Aviatrix comes in.
Absolutely. So Aviatrix is providing us a software platform. And the right way to think about it is that you have a platform that has a bunch of different products and services in it, right? And when you're building your enterprise network or your public cloud, you need a platform that gives you consistency, but it's able to fit the needs of individual clouds. So it shouldn't, the platform shouldn't try to enforce its own way. It should help you to consume the services from the native cloud provider where it is the right thing for you to do, and be able to extend those services by adding networking, security, and operational visibility. For example, most of the cloud provider connectivity within the cloud or between the clouds is not encrypted, right? So that is where Aviatrix comes in and say, well, we'll do the routing and everything, and we'll add encryption on top of it. And we won't be bogged down by the normal limitations of 1.2 gig. We will do it at high performance encryption, over 50, 60, 70, 80 gig of encrypted traffic, right? So that's an example of where you embrace the native and you extend it by providing the right services the enterprises need.
Now, you just said a limitation there, 1.2 gig. For people who aren't familiar with it, as they get into cloud networking, they didn't know about this. What are you talking about getting around?
Yeah, so that's a very common number that you would hear once you're talking about encryption in the cloud. So what happens is whenever you're doing encryption in the cloud, you can only use a single CPU core out of the instance that you're using. And the limitation of single CPU core in an instance is 1.2 gig. And the reason you never really heard about this challenge on-prem, because it's the same IPsec on-prem, so you still use a single CPU core, is that on-prem, the hardware vendors used the motherboard and the NIC cards and basically hardware assistance to overcome the limitation. But when you're in the cloud, you don't have the hardware or the control over the hardware. So you're limited to 1.2 gigs. So anytime when you're doing encryption, basically tunneling IPsec in the cloud, you will be limited to 1.2 gig throughput.
But you guys can work around that. Now, so let's rewind a bit. You said earlier, I believe, multi-cloud network architecture, MCNA, multi-cloud network architecture. And you also have talked about, so this isn't just networking, this is also some security that gets baked in here. But you use this term architecture. Why do we need an architecture as such? Is it really important that you use that word, or did somebody in marketing just kind of get a little excited and say, we better call it an architecture, then people will think it's cool?
No. That's not the way we think about the architecture. So I want to take you a step back in the history. So remember when Cisco came up with this data center architecture, they had the core, they had the aggregation layer, and then they have the access layer. Right, so there was a reason behind coming up with that architecture. There was a reason behind coming up with those layers, because we wanted to create a process around it. We want to give it a kind of a formation, right? So because each and every individual component has its place in the architecture, right? And then things evolve. So from this three-tier data center architecture, you know, applications started talking more east-west. So that actually gave rise to the spine and leaf architecture as we see today, right? So now there's a need to provide similar level of architecture or the control, the governance, the guardrail, whatever you want to call it, in the cloud. So this is where we gave this terminology to the industry that, hey guys, if you want to build the enterprise grade networking and security systems in the cloud, you need an architecture approach. And this is where we have the MCN, the multi-cloud network architecture. Make sense?
It does, yep. So with the idea of an architecture then, this architecture is abstracting away the various cloud networking differences that we find in AWS and Azure and GCP.
Exactly.
At least those three. I don't know if you deal with more. But the idea is I, as a networking professional, wow, we're not siloed anymore. But you know, let's call me a networking professional. I'm going to interact with Aviatrix and I'm going to leverage the Aviatrix multi-cloud network architecture to push down my networking policy and my own designs into these various public clouds without me having to worry about the various public clouds.
That's correct. And the way we actually enable this architecture, the MCN architecture, is by utilizing the Aviatrix software, right? So if you look at the Aviatrix software, the platform that we have, it has mainly two important components. So we have the Aviatrix controller, which is, you can think of it as a brain of your multi-cloud mm-hmm. network, right? And then this provides the management and control plane for this MCNA, the multi-cloud network architecture. And it's just an instance running in the public cloud marketplace. So you go to AWS Marketplace or Azure Marketplace, you search for Aviatrix, you'll find this controller software there. You go ahead and deploy it, right? And it will actually enable you to do, you know, a number of things. It will, like you said, will abstract this all this complexity of different clouds away, basically, by providing a common set of rules. For example, I'll just give you an example of in a controller talking BGP, and the controller can also understand the software-defined routing. The controller can also talk to various cloud APIs, and mm-hmm. it can see what's happening in the VPC, in the VNet, right? So this is like the common entry point for automation purposes as well. So that's the controller. And then we have something called the gateway, which provides the distributed, decoupled data plane in the cloud or across multiple clouds.
Now you called it a gateway and not a router. Is that on purpose?
It is on purpose. It's not just doing the routing, because if you look at this software piece or the EC2 instance running in the cloud, it understands the routing for sure. It can do BGP, it can do software-defined routing, but it goes beyond that. You can use it to terminate your IPsec tunnel in the site cloud use case, or for FQD and egress filtering, or for ingress filtering of the traffic that is coming in from the outside. So it can do a lot more than just providing simple routing.
So this sounds like this appliance, this gateway product that you're talking about, is the thing that cover where a given cloud provider doesn't have a function, say stateful firewall. Like some of the cloud providers don't offer stateful firewall functions, but some do. So if you need to have a consistent function, this is what the gateway appliance does. Is that a right assumption?
Yeah. So the way we see this appliance is basically providing additional functionality that is not provided by these cloud providers. So basically we are embracing the native construct, and then we are extending by utilizing this gateway by providing the advanced networking and security features.
So yeah. When the provider doesn't have a function, you still got to have it. Otherwise, you can't consistently configure a service across all the clouds. So if you want a load balancing function in three different clouds, and you know vendor AWS has got a load balancing feature, but Google GCP doesn't, unless you're doing a service mesh and you don't want a service mesh, so then you have to find a place to put the function in. But you don't want to have to go and buy some commercial load balancer at an extortionate fee. You want to be able to just get right ahead. So you're providing that as a baseline of functionality anywhere.
Right. But I would actually add that. So what you're saying is that if the provider doesn't have the function, right? So that may not necessarily be the only way, because the provider may have the function. For example, you have security groups, right? Or network security groups, it doesn't matter, right? And they provide stateful firewall. Now, where are they positioned? They are sitting next to the EC2 instance, right? So that means you have to create a security group essentially for each instance, right? So or if you're repurposing, which is not really a good practice to have the same security group across multiple instances, it's a lot of security groups that you have to manage, right? So now let's say I'll take a simple example. You have two VPCs that are connected to the transit, right? Where Aviatrix is sitting. You have an option of using the security groups at the EC2 instance. Sure, you can do that. Mm-hmm. Or if you say, you know what, I don't want to be managing 50 security groups here and 50 security groups there. I want one centralized place where I can do firewalling, right? So because the Aviatrix transit is providing connectivity between the VPCs, and in addition, without having to go buy or add a different firewall, you can just use the firewall at that transit layer to do layer 4 firewalling as well, right? It makes it centralized. So not necessarily where the function is completely not available in the architecture or the cloud provider's toolkit, but it's also about placement. And then when you're configuring a security group versus a network security group versus a firewall in GCP, they're very differently configured. Yeah, but if you have the transit-based architecture, it's the same way of configuring firewall rules irrespective of the cloud.
So your marketing material talks a lot about this repeatable architecture. There's no snowflakes, there's no unicorns. You're using this tool as a key part of that, being able to do the same thing in any cloud provider, you know, whether it's Oracle or whatever, to get where you want to be.
Right. So it's actually two parts. So the gateway is the enforcer, right, which implements. But controller is the main brains, as Shahzad mentioned, right? So whenever you're making the API calls, like you're terraforming or you're just making rules or whatever, you're doing it at the controller level, and you can select multiple gateways. Let's say if you have a consistent policy, for example, port 22 shouldn't be allowed as an example, right? You can use that same control plane to enforce that across multiple, gateways. And later in the conversation, we want to talk a little bit more about what you just mentioned, the repeatable architecture piece. And that's really where it comes in full highlight.
So there's something important to clarify here. We're not replacing all of the cloud native constructs with Aviatrix. I don't think we have the Aviatrix control plane on top. And then underneath for the data plane, we've got the gateway that Aviatrix offers, but we're also using some cloud native components too?
Absolutely, 100%. Why? Because you want to be able to use the native where it's appropriate, right? As an example, so I'll take a very simple example. You have one VPC and you have a second VPC, right? And they need to be able to talk to each other. Or actually, we have 10 VPCs, right? And they need to be able to talk to each other. You don't want to do VPC peering, right? That's unmanageable. So what you do is you deploy the Aviatrix transit, right? And you attach your different VPCs to it. Now, within the VPCs, right? It's when an instance is talking to another instance, it's using the native VPC route tables. It's using the implicit router. It's using the VPC construct, right? But when it's going from VPC to VPC via the transit, that's the place where Aviatrix gateways will route traffic between the VPCs. And at the same time, they will encrypt the traffic. And if you enforce a layer 4 firewall, they will do that. And if you have a need of a layer 7 firewall, they will do that. They will do that in partnership with a firewall vendor like Palo Alto, Checkpoint, or Fortinet.
But the look and feel of it all, the consistency comes from, I'm interacting with Aviatrix, you know, like from an operations perspective.
Absolutely. So you don't need to teach your operations team the nitty-gitties and variances of AWS and Azure and GCP. For them, it's a consistent experience.
Mm. It's only you and I that get tormented by the inconsistent experience. As is always the case.
Actually, you know, we're having great talk about these things, but I think let me put a little bit of structure around it that hopefully will help the audience put these things in context, because we were talking about the multi-cloud network architecture, right? And I want to break it down for the audience so they can easily, you know, visualize what this architecture means, or it's just a word, and what's inside, what's the meat, right? So the multi-cloud network architecture is mainly consistent of three pillars. The first one is the global multi-cloud networking. Second is security and operations. So you have networking, security, and operations are your three buckets. And it's very important to be able to bucketize your requirements alongside, because you need to worry about roles, responsibilities, and products and features and everything, right? So the idea here, and this architecture is not limited or for Aviatrix only. It's the three-tier architecture on-prem, as Shahzad mentioned, right? Access core aggregation, it's for not for Cisco only, it's for everybody to follow, right? The same thing here, the cloud reference architecture, the multi-cloud reference architecture is for everybody to follow. And when you're building your enterprise architecture, when you're building your products and other things, this is the litmus test for you. That, hey, my product or my infrastructure, does it do these things or not? If it does, then yes, it's following the best practice. And if it doesn't, then I need to look into it and see where I need to improve, right? So let's talk about the first piece, which is the global multi-cloud networking.
Well, that's what we've been talking about more or less, right? The common data plane and repeatable. Okay. So yeah.
Right.
So now we've got that mapped into the architecture here.
Yeah, I want to give people a visualization, right? That it's not mm-hmm. all over the place. It's very concrete and concise. So in the first piece, which is the networking, there are three key characteristics I would highlight, and we touched upon that already. The first one is the common consistent data plane. Irrespective of the cloud, is a consistent data plane. It's like you're building a highway and you have to build lots of bridges. You don't want the cars to worry about which bridge I'm driving on, right? It should be able to use the normal driving techniques to drive through across any bridge. Similarly, when you're crossing regions, you're crossing clouds, a consistent common data plane should allow you to be able to go anywhere and consume.
Well, and interestingly, I know we're kind of beating this point to death, but it keeps coming back up as significant in my mind. I'm not worrying about the distinctions underneath this common data plane. The data plane is being, it's just handled, and it's a little bit magical. I don't mean too magical, but because there's technology there. But the point being, you know, as an engineer who doesn't want to worry about the details underneath, the common data plane means I deal with Aviatrix and the rest just happens. So when I am interconnecting multiple public cloud environments, Aviatrix does that for me. It's actually a big pain in the butt to do this by yourself. You're nailing up a lot of IPsec tunnels and whatever else you might be doing with convoluted routing to plumb these environments together. It sucks. It's not an easy thing to do. There's performance concerns and so on. If I hand that off to the Aviatrix data plane, not everything, you still need great design, but a lot of these difficulties go away for me.
Absolutely. And the point here is that it's not magical in the sense that you don't have the recipe. It's magical in the sense you have the recipe in visualization as well. You'll be able to see. It's not like a transit gateway where you can't really go in and see how and what it's doing. It's for the network engineers who need the control and visualization to say, I want to be able to see the route tables. I want to be able to see the BGP state, or I want to be able to do show IP BGP neighbor or whatever, right? It's at that level where it gives you the control. It makes it the problems to get out of your way so you can consume and you can keep moving. So that's the common data plane. And the second thing is I've been talking about cloud connectivity. And I want to say one more thing is that the same principles apply whether you are in single cloud, even single region, single cloud, or multi-cloud. And it doesn't really matter. You need the same principles. And hopefully later in the conversation, I'll talk about some customer case studies where this really came into highlight. But I want to talk about another very key characteristic of the network architecture, and it is the repeatable architecture. So if you think about when you were building your on-prem data centers and you used to build a pod, right? So if I'm building a rack, I know what servers are, how many routers or switches are going to be there, how many power lines and all of that, right? So you built that one pod and then you replicate it across. It doesn't matter.
No. I'd build them all different because I like a challenge.
Excellent.
No, you are the challenging person. Yeah, I can see that.
Absolutely. So same thing, right? That's the best practice you had on-prem. And it didn't change when you were in one data center or multiple data centers. And the same principles apply in the cloud. When you're building your architecture, you need to think from a pod-like, you know, characteristics that if I wanted multiple stamp out blueprint of something, how can I do that? And if I can do that in one cloud, one region, and I can do it in multi-cloud and multi-regions, and I can connect them all, that's the golden rule, right? To be able to do that. And Aviatrix allows you to do that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, this does make sense with the repeatable architecture. We've got the common data plane now, and really we're the emphasis on the word global multi-cloud networking, right? It's the same everywhere. My data plane's the same. The way I'm building units are the same. You use that analogy of a pod. So I want to dig into the next part of the architecture framework that you guys have defined, the multi-cloud network architecture. We've talked about global multi-cloud networking, the first step. Now, security, because I want to understand how you guys are positioned. Security means so many different things. It means just encryption to some people. It means firewalls to other people. So how does Aviatrix fit into a security scheme?
Yeah, man, security is all over the place. I know this is the hottest topic, no matter where you go, whichever industry you talk to, whichever vertical you talk to. And I think that a single vendor cannot provide all the security needs that a network architecture needs, right? So what we do basically at Aviatrix, we become the enabler of IT security in the public cloud, right? So we become that glue, that stickiness that can actually bring the holistic security posture to your networking and your network in the cloud, basically, right? And that's why the security is the main pillar of our MCN architecture. And without the reference architecture, I believe that you end up in chaos, right? So that's why you need to have these security elements in the cloud. Yeah, so there are different challenges that our product actually solve for a lot of customers. I can highlight some of the features. Hamad already mentioned about the need for encryption, right? A lot of customers, they have purchased the private connectivity to connect their cloud to on-prem, for example, the direct connect and express route. But the reality is that these circuits are not providing encryption by default. So let's say if you are a customer, you purchase 10 gig link, private link, the cloud provider will tell you that, hey, yeah, that's fine. You trust us. It's a private link. But the reality is that as a network architect, you need to own the architecture. When something breaks, you are, in the line. You need to answer, like, why is it not working, why the data was leaked. So with our high performance encryption, which is line rate performance, we can actually give you the encryption on that direct connect or express route link at the line rate. So that's one of the features. And then we also discussed briefly about the firewall networks or the next generation firewall. How would you actually insert the firewall into your flow? So let's say you have a VPC with the need for a PCI or HIPAA compliance. You need to make sure that the traffic that is going into the VPC or leaving from the VPC is inspected by the next generation firewall. So it's very kludgy and difficult to actually insert a firewall. And even when you insert the firewall, you end up configuring those IPsec tunnel, and then you're limited by the 1.25 GB bandwidth. And then in majority of the cases, what I have seen customers are deploying active standby. They cannot really use the active nature of those firewall vendor. And the reason is that when you go with the active firewall deployment, you basically are creating BGP and you are running ECMP, the equal cost multipath, to provide this active load balancing across the set of firewalls that you would have in a security VPC. But then the problem comes that in order to achieve that, you have to enable SourceNAT on this firewall. right? So that now you're losing the visibility into the traffic. And we are actually eliminating all those problems or limitations that you find in the in a typical firewall deployments by providing these gateways that can actually do the load balancing across the firewall. They can provide the session stickiness, and they will eliminate all these limitations of the bandwidth.
But is not itself a firewall, correct? In other words, Aviatrix isn't the firewall, but you can do service chaining to a firewall or load balance across a pool of firewalls.
Actually, it's both. Let me just make sure that we are clear. So you have two different feature sets, right? So our Aviatrix gateway have inherent layer 4 firewalls, right? That can provide a centralized layer 4 firewall. But when you have a need for a next-gen firewall that can do layer 7, because you can't achieve PCI compliance just by a layer 4 firewall, whether it's Aviatrix or a security group or NSG from a cloud provider, you can't achieve that, right? So you need a next-gen firewall that can do payload inspection and threat and all those things, right? Now, inserting that layer 7 firewall has challenges, as Shahzad mentioned. So we do both. So where your architecture requires you to do a centralized layer 4 firewall, customers use us. But when they need to say, hey, no, this traffic needs a deep packet inspection by a next-gen firewall, that's where Aviatrix will orchestrate all the routes and the VPCs and the transits and the VNets and redirect the traffic to the firewall. And we actually also program the routes of the next-gen firewall, like Palo Alto, to make sure that the end-to-end architecture flows smoothly.
That goes back to that analogy you opened up on the security section about being glue, connecting all the security functionality together.
Right, right. That's true.
Mm. And I think it's also important that this means that customers can bring their baggage, their heritage, their legacy, whatever you want to call it. You know, like if you have a particular policy that says that the only blessed firewall in our organization is a brand X, brand Y or firewall, you have the ability to support those and to use them if that's what your security policy mandates.
That is correct. That is correct. And this security discussion is like I said, it was a very, very holistic conversation. And then it does not stop at this network firewall only, right? So we actually go beyond the firewall network or supporting the third-party firewall. We do have mechanisms in the product to protect the traffic that is coming in from the internet or going towards the internet. For example, we have a security feature called FQD and egress filtering feature. So you would see, or you might have noticed that the way the modern applications are written these days, they are talking to a lot of endpoints outside of their own domain, right? So they're going into the public cloud. They're accessing some APIs or maybe downloading something from GitHub, or they have a need to connect to Office 365 or storage devices, right? So the way customers used to do this is by creating the layer 4 access control list, ACLs, right? But that is not, a good solution. You need to have a control where you can specify those rules based on the fully qualified domain name. For example, you should be able to say that star.github.com is allowed, but rest is blocked. This is exactly how we provide this feature in our product. Then I will also mention the ingress routing feature or the security that we provide for the ingress traffic that is coming in from the internet side. So we work in conjunction with AWS GuardDuty. So let's say if you have a bad actor sitting out there trying to attack your public-facing application. So we actually consult with active duty findings, and based on those findings, we can actually block that traffic on the fly. So that's also something we provide.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense, because when you're talking about threat detection or threat intelligence, or in this case, I think GuardDuty is fraud detection. Those are quite specific services that you want to invoke from the provider that actually work the way you want them to be.
Yeah. So essentially GuardDuty, AWS GuardDuty, what it does, it has like a global database kind of thing of malicious IPs. So if it sees that your workload is talking to, or the external entity is talking to your workload and it's a malicious IP, guard duty by default, it just alerts you that, hey, this is happening, but there's no action part of it, right? So this is where we integrate with guard duty. So we take the recommendation from the guard duty and enforce it via our platform. I actually wanted to add one more thing. So Greg, maybe we can put it after the question that you had asked about the baggage piece, right? That they can bring the baggage. So essentially, you know, the key point here is that bringing the firewalls is not really baggage, because, you know, on-prem, you have built certain policies, right? You have compliance that has been blessed by audit and compliance teams, right? So you have these policies. Now, if you were to get a brand new firewall or even a cloud service provider firewall or whatever, then you need to go through all the red tape to get it blessed again, right? Which would delay deployments in the cloud. So the ability to bring your on-prem firewall into the cloud, it actually expedites your application deployment, because you have predefined set of rules and methodology. So
you're being very generous. You're being very generous and optimistic. You're right, though. That's why I said baggage, heritage. So sometimes you could look at it as the legacy. You're like, you've got this legacy firewall strategy that you've built and you want to bring it. I think for most people, when they come to the cloud, they should be looking to change the way they think about firewalling and start to look at what cloud services they can use. I mean, what does a firewall actually do? And look at the function, not the brand name or not the imagined. And if you think about it, a firewall is just there to block traffic. And on the basis that you can't trust one side, but you can another, but in the cloud, you actually know where the traffic's coming from and you know where it's all going to. So there's a different, you don't need the firewall functions that you need in an on-premises deployment. It's a different type of process. But that said, a lot of people would just go, God, just stick with what we've got. I'll take the baggage and put it in, and then everybody will stop yelling at me.
So. And it also comes down to, for me as a security guy, right, I now need to bless something, and I won't bless it, and I won't put my job on the line unless I have full confidence in it, right?
And then, you know, it's a very complex debate and it's outside. Yeah. But my point was is, if that's what I need to do, I've got the
ability.
Aviatrix lets me do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But keep in mind that at the same time, a lot of what Aviatrix provides you is actually a need not to have firewalls at all, if you don't want to. And if you want a control point or you want an inspection control, there are functions that Aviatrix can invoke from the cloud platforms themselves that are cheaper or better, you know, maybe better used.
Yep.
Well, do you guys deal with user VPN at all? And I ask that because as you begin to put more and more workloads in the cloud, it doesn't make sense to terminate your user VPN at some headquarters location, because everything they need to get to is in the cloud anyway. So is there a way with Aviatrix I can terminate VPN users up there?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have this user VPN feature that allows your remote users, like you said, it could be a partner or it could be a contractor, to basically come into the cloud without, you know, you going into the headquarter location and then hairpinning or forwarding this traffic towards the cloud. You can directly come into the cloud using the user VPN feature, which is a SAML-based VPN feature that we provide to the industry. And then it's also profile-based. So let's say you have contractor one, part of project one. Contractor two is part of project two. So you want to provide a profile-based access so that they have access to the resources that they need to go, but not anywhere else. So you can actually definitely use user VPN feature to provide those type of functionality. And it also integrates very nicely with the multi-factor authentication tools like Duo and Okta. So you have this additional layer of security in place when you are bringing those users into your data center or into your public cloud, I should say.
So that's it's a fairly robust set of security features. When you first started describing it, and again, going back to that glue analogy, I was like, oh, okay, they're just going to chain me to other things that do security. And while there is a part of that, you do a lot of security in the box there as a part of the data plane as well. There's a whole lot of functionality there.
Yeah, and if I would like to add here, if you have time, I would also like to add this the S3 access over private WIF that we have. And this is a great feature for the security conscious people, because when you are in AWS and let's say you purchase the direct connect connection, and if you want your on-prem devices to have access to the S3 buckets in AWS or this direct connection, then you are required to open public WIF or configure public WIF. And when you enable public WIF, by default, AWS will send you all those S3 bucket IP addresses. It will just dump it in your on-prem routing table. And that sometime could be a problem for a lot of security companies out there, right? So what they want a mechanism so that they can access those S3 buckets over a private WIF. So this is another security feature we have in our product that allows you to write the policies so that the on-prem resources are only allowed to access the S3 buckets using those the private connections or private endpoints.
I don't know, you guys, if you improve the security of my S3 buckets, I mean, shouldn't they all be public? Because that's where I store my passwords and stuff, right?
Okay, based on the evidence, yes, that's true.
Exactly right. So a whole lot of security features here then. And again, going back to our context of the multi-cloud network architecture, we talked about global multi-cloud networking. We just talked about security. Now, there's a third leg you folks have here, which is operations that is also a part of the MCNA, the architecture. So, okay, operations. I was a little surprised to see that as I was reviewing this as a big part of the architecture, because ops is like, that's just a training problem, right? You teach people to use the product and off you go. Wink, wink, yeah. Nudge, nudge. I'm totally trolling you.
Just put it in the run book. Just put it in the run book.
And I would say what I said earlier. So yeah, let's send our 50 people to 15 different trainings and see you in 2 years.
Hey, don't laugh. That's how we got to where we are in enterprise networking today. I was literally sending everybody to courses until they all got certifications.
Oh my God. And yes.
That was how it was, 10 to 15 years ago. So, maybe that's the way. I don't know.
That's the way. So while we think on that, let me introduce you to the operational capabilities of Aviatrix, which I personally think the networking is cool. A security, yes, definitely. Everyone wants security. Operations is that ugly thing that people are like, yeah, we'll get to it. Let's build it first, and then we'll get to operations, right? And then what they find is that when they architect it without operations in mind, the tier three guy, the tier four network architect, becomes the tier one support person. Now, let me tell you what's happening there. So your operations team that is supporting your on-prem is the same operations team that's supporting the cloud, right? So what, from a network troubleshooting perspective, and I'll take troubleshooting first, what they have is they have some familiar troubleshooting tools on-prem and they have established best practices. So what is the common troubleshooting tool for on-prem? Ping, traceroute, packet capture. This is no rocket science, right? These are the basic things that you need. Now, when you go to the cloud, and if you're using some of the native constructs without having operations in mind, what will happen is you will take away those familiar troubleshooting tools from the operations team. And when they don't have those familiar troubleshooting tools, they don't know how to troubleshoot issues in the cloud. And what will they do? They will escalate. They'll escalate to you, the guy who built it and who knows these native constructs very well, to say, hey, dude, here's a ticket.
See, now that's a really excellent sales pitch. Work avoidance. Now this is something I can get behind. I shouldn't have to do.
Let's practice that. So that's where Aviatrix comes into play. So first of all, going back to the controller, which has the global view of all the entities across the multiple clouds, right? It blends in the operations tools. So we have a lot of different troubleshooting tools. And I'll walk you through a very simple troubleshooting scenario. So I was at a customer a couple of weeks ago, and we were doing training. And there was a simple request that came in saying, VPC1, I have an instance here, and a VPC2, I have an instance here. And can you please allow connectivity between these two things, right? Simple enough request. So two guys out of our training room, one a double CCIE and another senior network guy, they walked out saying, we'll be back in half an hour. They didn't come back the whole day. They were working from noon till like 8 p.m. to solve their problem. Because the issue is that when you have even this most simple problem to solve, you need 25 to 30 different data points to collect it individually. So what you end up with is 50 tabs open on your browser, essentially. And you need to map all these things and fix each of these things individually. And that's why you needed specialized knowledge, right? So what Aviatrix does, for example, a tool which is called FlightPath, and I would recommend the listeners to YouTube search Aviatrix FlightPath. And what it does, it allows you to say, here's my account one, here's my VPC, and here's an IP address, and here's in my account two or same account, and here's a VPC or a VNet or a destination IP. And please show me everything from a networking and security perspective in between that I need to worry about. So it will check the security group of the instance, the NACL, the VPC route table, the gateway route table, the transit route table at source. It will do the exact same thing at destination. If you are crossing different regions within the same cloud provider, it will check all the transitive routing. If you're crossing multiple clouds, it will do exactly the same thing. It will check network security groups and VNet peerings and everything.
So FlightPath then, it's a multi-cloud packet walk. It's going to show me everything that could be, like you mentioned, it's looking at ACLs. All right. So if my packet's getting dropped because of this ACL, it's going to flag that to me.
Absolutely. It will flag that, and it won't just flag the drop. It will actually show you where it is. It was allowed. It will show you this rule allowed it and that rule allowed it. And I'll tell you another customer story where we ran FlightPath and everything looked good. And we had their VP sitting in the room, and he's like, hold on. I see something. Why there is a quad zero allow on this security group? And the guys start looking, like, oh yeah, in August we were troubleshooting something and we put it there just for validation and testing. We never took it out. And of course, nobody complained. Quad zero is allowed, right? So this, the tool gave them the visibility to be able to, you know, obviously troubleshoot, but also validate that if the right thing is allowing the traffic or not.
Permit IP any. Remark, we'll fix this
exactly.
Later.
Exactly.
Yeah. Approved by.
I love that.
Hamad.
Approved at 4 in the morning by VP.
So, I mean, that's just one of the tools. I mean, we have other tools like, you know, I'll give you an example of, I'm not beating on any cloud provider, right? But just take an example of like, Transit Gateway, AWS Transit Gateway, right? It's a router, but it's like a router slash hub kind of thing, right? If I'm on-prem and I need to troubleshoot connectivity, what would I do? I would log into the router. I would ping from router A to the destination or router A to like, you know, the other end router or whatever, right? How would you do that in the cloud? You can't. You can't log into a Transit Gateway. You can't see the BGP state. You can't do show IP BGP route. Like, you can't do any of those things. You can't run a trace route. How are you going to troubleshoot, right? So this is what I was talking about, the lack of familiar troubleshooting tools, which is inherently what it's doing, is it's increasing the mean time to resolution. The cloud problems are taking longer and longer to solve because you don't have the common troubleshooting tools. And this is where really Aviatrix comes in, because we bring in FlightPath, we bring in ping, traceroute, packet capturing, like in a single click, you can do that. So from, if I'm an operations guy, I have a simple workflow that I'll run FlightPath, I'll do ping and traceroute, I'll take a packet capture. Before I escalate the ticket, I will collect all of these things and escalate. And most likely, I'll find the problem, because FlightPath is going to tell me, or the packet capture is going to show me what's happening with the packet. So the mean time to resolution really cuts down. So this is just an example of a couple of tools that we have, and this is focused on troubleshooting and control. And I'm not even talking about visibility yet.
Yeah, so the visibility, we have something called Copilot, which is our extreme visibility tool, which actually goes beyond what Hamad already mentioned. So a lot of time when we talk to customers, we find out that these customers, they don't even have a clue about their own cloud topology, right? So I was talking to this customer in Portland, and then he was explaining this problem to me. He said, dude, my application owners, they created this mess. They started creating VPC because we didn't have any process around it. And now I'm kind of taking the control over this cloud network. And I see there are lots of dormant VPCs. There are instances attached to, you know, XYZ VPC, and I don't have any visibility into that. So this is where this Copilot tool is helping this customer so that they can actually draw the topology on the fly in the cloud or across the cloud. They can search based on certain criteria like the IP address, instance name, or whatnot. And actually it shows them that, okay, this instance is connected to this VPC. This is not connected anywhere in the transit. So this is like outside of my transit domain. There is no security around it. So that's one way of they are using this product. And then it also has a feature like providing information about various traffic flows. For example, where my traffic is coming from or where exactly it is going to. So you can see that, you know, this guy or this VPC is actually talking to someone in Panama, for example, or somewhere else. So I don't have any business there. So why is it doing that? So this tool can also provide visibility for the traffic that is originating from different places or going towards different places. And it can actually show you like a nice global view of your entire multi-cloud topology. It can show you like a heat map. Like this is the pieces or areas in the world where, you know, a lot of traffic is being originated and whatnot. So yeah, so this is the extreme visibility tool that we have. I would encourage our listeners to try this out. And you know, see it themselves.
Now, this has been interesting because as I've been reflecting on this, you've been describing, you know, FlightPath and the various other troubleshooting tools, visibility, and so on. I was thinking first, oh, this is all nice. And then I was like, wait a minute. No, you need this. In other words, if you're going to operate a network across multi-cloud, how in the heck do you troubleshoot? What are you going to do? Stand up your NMS and throw a bunch of SNMP poles at some things somewhere and kind of get a vague idea of what's going on? How useful is that? Not very. So you guys are leveraging the data and metadata that you have, building out the multi-cloud networking, all the cloud-native constructs that you talk to and know about, and then are presenting that back in a consumable way so that as an operator, I now have a way to figure out what the heck is going on as I'm shoving data around between these different clouds. Without that, it's nice to have the connectivity and the common data plane and all that stuff, but I'm sort of screwed when things break as they inevitably do. So with the visibility tool unifying that, it's not moving packets for me. It's telling me what's going on, but it actually does deliver on that idea of the unified data plane in a very important way.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I would actually add one thing. So whatever you said is absolutely true. And it's true for multi-cloud, but it's also true for single cloud. And that's where a lot of people, you know, when they hear the talk conversation of multi-cloud, they're like, oh, I'm in single cloud. I don't have to worry about this. No. It doesn't matter. It's the same problem statement, same issues, same principles required. Even if you're in single cloud, single region, single cloud, multi-region, it doesn't matter. The principles are the same.
Well, gentlemen, I want to hear a story now. So here's the thing. You've brought us to the Church of Aviatrix. We've been sitting in the pews. You've been preaching. All right, now I want to believe. I want to be converted. So do that by bringing home all of this data and information you've been sharing with us about Aviatrix with a customer story. In other words, you guys have been around for a few years now. I've been working with a lot of customers. Surely you've got something that's gonna make me make me join and become a member here.
Absolutely. So we've been around for more than 5 years, and we have over 400 customers. Just to throw some data points out there, and most of our customers that come, sort of unfortunately, are brownfield customers, because they come to us when they're in pain, when they're really suffering. Because a lot of customers, when they start, they feel that, oh, it's cloud, it's easy, I can just Terraform this thing, or, you know, I can just peer these things. They initially, they don't really realize it, but when the problem, you know, aggravates and later down in their journey, they realize that, no, it's not. Terraform is not my network architecture. It's just an enabler, right? So let me tell you this customer who came to us, just like, you know, many other customers. So it was a large global financial, and they had started their journey in public cloud for about a year or so. So in their words, it was still early. And they started with a single region in AWS because they wanted to build their best practices and stuff before they expanded. And what they had done, they had hired a team of coders, and they had Terraform entire deployment. And basically what their Terraform was doing, it would create the VPCs, it would do the route tables in the VPC and attach it, and then do the transit gateway and attach the transit gateway. Then it would create a quad zero route in the VPCs point to the transit, and a quad zero on the transit pointing south to on-prem, right? So, you know, it was a simple solution and they thought this is good, right? And they initially tested with few applications and, you know, which included prod, dev, test and stuff. So it worked well initially, right? But then when they opened for business, real business, and they started asking their app owners that, hey, cloud first strategy, let's know when, if you can, please deploy your applications to the cloud. Now came the variety of requirements. So they got some applications. They said, well, we need a layer 7 firewall because, you know, we need compliance or we are customer facing. We can't just have layer 4 firewalls, right? So we need layer 7 firewalls. Now, imagine all the VPCs are attached to the same transit gateway, right? So you have one set of VPCs that need a layer 7 firewall. Next to it is another set of VPC, which is test environments. And their app owner saying, no, 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 I don't need a layer 7 firewall. You're going to slow me down. I need to run all these tests. I can't wait for firewall rules to be approved, right? And then you had some sensitive app owners who said, I don't want to sit in next to a test bed. What if they run some load testing or do something which impacts my production environment? So I need isolation, right? Then they had some other apps which said, I need access directly to the internet from the cloud because I'm doing payment processing. And if I go to on-prem and internet access, it's too slow for me, right?
This project's got some serious scope creep going on right now.
This is not just one guy. This is not one customer. This is what happens in all the enterprise. Because when you come in to the cloud and when you're onboarding, it's the world is very different. If you look at how your on-prem was, imagine where was internet from the application. It was far away. It's outside of the core. So the workload never had to think about it. Now think where is internet in the cloud? It's next to the application in the VPC, right? So it's very different. Now, with all of these things going on, everybody wanted traffic monitoring and troubleshooting. And then they had some big business units which said, we want to control our own layer 7 firewall rules, right? So now at the end of the day, if you think about all these requirements, these cannot be satisfied by using a single transit gateway attached to VPCs, right? So they knew that they had to expand and they needed multiple transit gateways. But there's a limit of 5 transit gateways in a region, and those transit gateways cannot be paired with each other. So even if you build them, you won't be able to scale past 5, and you won't be able for them to talk to each other, right? So that's where they found about Aviatrix, and they came to us saying, like, this is a problem statement for us, and we have all these and other issues. How can you help us? So from this is where the reference architecture with the pod-like characteristic really came in, because we said, let's build an architecture. So first of all, what we did was we asked them to group the different requirements together. So let's say the applications that needed layer 7 firewall, but controlled by central IT, right? So we built a transit for them, and the transit had the next gen firewall in it and attached all those VPCs. Then we built a separate transit for dev and test environments. Then we had some other, you know, a centralized IT kind of transit. And all of these are connected to each other. And I'm talking all single region. I'm not talking multi-region right now. It's all single region, right? And all of these are connected. And the base thing is the repeatable architecture. It's a blueprint, right? So now they were able to turn around to their business owners and application owners saying, give me a requirement. Do you need isolation or control? Do you need a layer 7 firewall? Yes or no? And do you need connect isolation from everybody else? Do you need localized internet access? And they were able to provide these things depending on the requirements. They were not really limited by the limitations of the cloud provider. So this is just one example that hopefully would help you understand that why the repeatable architecture and common data plane is so important. And then, of course, the visibility that comes with it, right? The platform is built for operational visibility, so all the troubleshooting tools apply.
Yeah, and then this customer is now actually extending this data center into another AWS region and also expanding into Azure because they have a need or requirement to connect to Azure for different type of services that it provides. So they are building their cloud DR strategy around this architecture now, which is, I mean, great because, you know, this is the simplicity that they were looking for. And they got it with this architecture approach. And not only the build processes, but also in the area of automation, because now they have this controller, AVTX controller, being the Terraform provider. So they can use this as an entry point into AWS and also the same thing for Azure. So it's the same consistent automation layer that this architecture provides to them.
Now, for people that are listening to this, they just heard a story that had a customer with a lot of complex requirements and some scope creep there, which is, as you pointed out, kind of typical as you get involved in these engagements. But maybe there's some folks out there listening and they're going, my world's not that complicated. I probably don't need AVATRIX. Can you give us some examples of the kind of problems that you've been solving for different people? So like, you know, we just had one story, but give us some classifications like, hey, if you've got this sort of an issue, this sort of a problem you're trying to solve, we have been working on these kind of problems with our different customers.
Yeah, so I would take it one layer up, right? Because you know you can get lost in the use cases and the specific problem statement. So let me tell you like the kind of business level problems that we are able to solve for customers. So for example, time to market is very essential, right? So now as we talked, right, if you had the same mentality as on-prem and you didn't had tool set and a product like AVATRIX to help you, you would be taking ages to deploy VNets and connecting them and inserting firewalls. How are you going to be able to keep up with the DevOps space, right? The agility, how are you going to bring it? So that's where we come in, right? You have business agility requirement. Your time to market is important to you, right? That's where you need AVATRIX. Then another thing, which is, you know, for a little larger global organization, so we have a customer who has a lot of points of presence across the globe, and all of their locations connect to their on-prem data center in one location. Now with AVATRIX, what they're able to do is the applications that these stores need access to, they have deployed in multiple regions of multiple clouds. So now instead of their common saying is that we don't have two data centers anymore, we have 100. Because the cumulative set of all the cloud providers across the world is now their data center. And it is only possible because AVATRIX is able to provide that common data plane and connectivity irrespective of the cloud, right? So there's so many things, and we talked about security and compliance. That's a huge, huge space where we come in. Essentially, what one of the customers said that what I need, where I need you guys is so I can take control back, right? I have shadow IT, and I have all these things going on. I don't have control.
Yeah, well, and if I would,
it also has to be said, you probably don't have control today, and this is a chance to take control.
Yep.
Because this is the first time you've had a chance to do things too.
Yeah, and I could actually answer the question differently because Ahmad mentioned this, the business challenges and how AVATRIX is solving them. But if you want to go into the, you know, nitty-gritty details of all those features, you can go to docs.avatrix.com. We have, you know, very comprehensive and easy to read documentation out there. What I would like to highlight here is the AWS TGW orchestration feature, for example. That is something being used by a lot of customers, right? And if you look at or peel the onion of this TGW, you will see it has its own limitation. For example, the number of routes it can support and the way it interacts with other VPCs, basically everything is wide open. So we come in and we actually take control of this TGW and provide the concept of security domain. So this is the concept where you can actually segregate or segment your VPCs based on the function they perform. So for example, if you have prod VPCs and you don't want them to talk to your dev VPCs, you can actually use Aviatrix TGW orchestration to provide that level of control. And not only that, we have features like the route auditing feature. So let's say someone goes in the AWS console and then configure a bunch of routes which were not approved by the enterprise, then we can actually see that. We will see that, and we can actually provide you the alert based, hey, this does not look nice, right?
There is a form of compliance. What you're actually saying there is you can use it as a policy / compliance detection capability.
Exactly. You can actually use it in that fashion. And not only that, let's say if you have an on-prem sending some routes towards the TGW or even towards our Aviatrix Transit Gateway, and for some and for the compliance and auditing reasons, you wanna flag those routes and you wanna approve those routes before they can actually go and being injected into the other routing domains. So we have this option in the controller, and this is being used by a lot of customers where they are receiving those routes from on-prem from their partner location. Obviously, they trust their partner, but you have to be careful as well. And you have to verify. So you can have these knobs enabled so that if a site is sending a route, a default route, for example, you're going to block it. And unless an admin goes into the controller and approves it, it won't go anywhere.
Guys, if we dig into every feature that's in there, no one's going to remember it all, and we'll be here all day. So I think what we should do is tell folks how they can find out more information. Now, there's a couple of points here. One, I just heard you mention docs.aviatrix.com. Does that mean you have a freely available documentation site? Please say yes.
Yes, this is exactly the case, and it's hard to find these days. A free website where you can find the technical documentation you're looking for without any marketing fluff. So it's for you and me, technical geeks and nerdy people out there. Go out there and check it out. And not only that, we have also started community.aviatrix.com because we want like-minded people, technologists, to come and then join this multi-cloud conversation. So, you're welcome to join that community as well.
Okay, so we've got docs.aviatrix.com, we've got community.aviatrix.com, and then near the top of the show, one of you pointed out that I can just go into the Amazon Marketplace, for example, and just deploy this thing.
Exactly.
Does that mean a salesperson's then going to call me and I got to get license keys and a bunch of stuff, or?
No, not at all. It's there. It's there for you to consume. You just go log into the marketplace and then just deploy it. And it's free to deploy. You're not charging for you to deploy it. Yeah, you will be paying for the instance cost to the cloud provider, but that's it.
Okay. I mean, but at some point I am paying Aviatrix some money if I decide I want to use this thing, right?
Yeah, obviously. When you are start to build your meaningful network architecture with the gateways, with the tunnel, with all the features that we talked about, at that point you will. And it's a meter mechanism that we have. You don't have to come to Aviatrix to buy the license. Like in some other vendor's case, you have to bring your own license first before you can actually use it in a meaningful way.
But the point is, I can self-deploy today. I don't have to call Aviatrix. I don't have to license this thing up. But between docs.aviatrix.com and self-deploying from the marketplace, I can give this thing a test drive. And it doesn't cost me anything other than my normal data transfer charges that I'd pay to the cloud provider anyway.
Absolutely. And when you look at our documentation and also you look at the UI, everything is a workflow, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And next to every workflow has README, and it will take you to the docs. And all the things are well lined up with architecture diagrams and everything.
All right. Well, Hamad and Shahzad, can people reach out to you if they have questions and want to find out more?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm actually available on Twitter at virtualshahzad. And then I also have my own personal blog, netjoints.com. So you can reach me easily.
Lovely. How about you?
You can reach me, Cloud Hamad, on Twitter, or just look me up on LinkedIn.
Virtual Shahzad, Cloud Hamad. Oh, I see what you guys did there. All right. Thanks to both you guys for appearing on Heavy Networking today. And thanks to you for listening and to Aviatrix for sponsoring this episode. You can find this and many more of our fine and free technical podcasts along with our community blog. That's all at packetpushers.net. You can keep up with us on Twitter at packetpushers, and we're also on LinkedIn and so on. Last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.